This conference will now be recorded.
We've already been through the bidding process, so I think there's more of a shift. Jump on.
Looks like we got a quorum.
And then maybe.
Let's get started. We have a quorum here now, so welcome everybody to the DTAC meeting today. First item on the agenda is to consider the minutes from March 4th, 2025.
I have a comment on the blank before Santa Clara's Casey Stratton. What's he that filling in for me?
Okay.
About Washington City report, we're not good. Turnpike is on 200 east and Telegraph is 300 east.
Okay.
I made that correction.
I wasn't here, so that correction and Casey Stratton. Anybody else? Any changes? You have a motion to approve?
A motion to approve with those edits.
I have a motion to approve. We have a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Arthur and a second by Dustin. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Planning, item A, mobility management program.
So every year we put our mobility management program together and the NPO is funding the mobility management program. So I thought it would be appropriate for Scott Bias to come and tell us a little bit about that mobility management program and get this group's awareness of that program. Go ahead, Scott.
Thanks, Myron, and thank you for your financial support. I recognize a lot of familiar faces here. I'm Scott Bias, the mobility manager. I'm part of the NPO, and ultimately, as a mobility manager, I'm all about helping our target population, which is our seniors, people with disabilities, and low income, accessing public transportation, other transportation modes. And I am the one for five counties, so I go from here to Garfield, over to Beaver, over to Kane County, and as well as here. So as the, excuse me, as a mobility manager, I have what's called a regional mobility council that I work with, which is comprised of health and human service agencies within all of the five county regions. Often that includes all the senior center directors, but locally it also includes some of our health agencies, health and human service agencies, with a goal in mind of don't recommend eating right before you give a presentation. But it is to find ways to improve those services for those people. But ultimately, we want to help everybody to access transit services. Some of the ways that I do that, and I just came from Hurricane, where I went to the high school and worked with some people with disabilities, and we accessed the transit today from Hurricane over to the mall, and then waited for the bus to come back and got back on the bus. So the goal is to help those individuals, particularly with disabilities, learn some of those basic skills so that they can have some autonomy and start using that bus. I mean, we have a young lady on the bus this morning. Her mother drives her from Hurricane to St. George every day to go to work. Well, guess what? After riding the bus today, she's confident, and if her mother supports her, she'll be able to start riding the bus to work every day. So just one example of what we're seeing. So along with the travel training, what I try to do is identify different agencies within our area and identify champions who can. So I'll train them, and then they become their travel training champion. For example, RRCI, Turn Community Services. I've worked with Dove Center, and then they in turn help train their people to ride the bus system and other resources out there. Another resource that I am pretty heavily involved in and seeking additional funding is what we call our medical out and about medical voucher program. what that allows us to do is it allows me to reimburse drivers for people who are unable to make it to their doctor appointments. As you can imagine, in the five county region, particularly in the rural areas, that's a huge issue. A lot of these elderly people are unable to drive themselves. A lot of them are on fixed incomes as well. I remember signing up an 87-year-old female in Garfield, and I told her what we were doing, what we were about, and tears started rolling down her face. She goes, I'm not going to have to cancel my next doctor appointment because I have the resources of help. I think her fixed income was $500 to $600 a month. So these exist all over in our five county region, somewhat in Washington County, but as we spread out, that becomes an even greater issue. So every year and a half, I've been able to get about $15,000 to pay for this medical voucher program. So I've been through two rounds of that since I've been employed with five county. Those funds usually last me 3 to 4 months. And then, so I'm out of funds as of March 1st of this year. My next funding comes January 1st. I have asked for additional funds and through UDOT, Rural Public Transit Team, and received a $20,000 match, which is going to give me $40,000 starting in January. My goal is to have the program run continuously year to year rather than having a, you know, I use it, it's gone, people wait 6, 8 months. So we're on a good trajectory to have that happen for the next 2 years. I've been approved for funding for those. So that's a very needed area. Recently, we had a five-county mobility study done in conjunction with the UDOT's Rural Public Transit Team. And this study was to take a look at five county region and look at gaps, or in other words, things that are preventing people to get from point A to point B. And as you can imagine, there was a lot. And this is a copy of it. It's posted on our website, the Dixie MPO website, which is dixie-mpo.com. Encourage you in all of your free time, leisure time, to hop on and take a look at that. There's some really good information, some data in here that may be helpful for you, anywhere from demographics to various other things. So good information. What I wanted to share is they did a study, and they did some actually a survey. So I just wanted to throw out a few of the surveys, some feedback from some different areas. And I'm going to just sit down if that's okay. We will start with, so Hurricane, these are just random. There's no name or anything like that other than the town they're from. I have no idea how we will shop or go to the doctor in a couple of years when we no longer drive. We sure can't afford to pay much. Now, the caveat that I want to say up front is when I read some of these, you're going to be like, that sounds probably right. And then there's others that can be like, wow, they're really have a lot of passion for that. And then there's others, but there's some good ones in here as well. This is Ivins, more buses in Ivins and a quicker bus route to get around St. George. Leverkin, while my family and I have few and any transportation issues, many others in my community do. Public transit from Leverkin to Hurricane St. George is supposedly starting soon. It has. But initial route planning doesn't appear to make that planned transit route convenient or useful for employment, medical services, or shopping purposes. But hate to see the money provided by the state and UDOT not to be used in a way that really benefits those that need access to transportation. St. George, frequent bus transit connecting cities as well as better land use planning are very important to mitigate car dependency in Washington County. I'm fortunate to have a car. Concern for people who do not, if they depend on public transportation. This one's a little bit lengthier. I feel satisfied with car transportation. Roads and highways are rarely in traffic and get me when I need, where I need to fast. It's when on the rare occasion I do not have a car, I need to travel outside to neighboring cities, including where I work. Then it becomes an apparent, an extreme cost or sometimes impossible when trying to use taxi or the bus. I love to walk to nearby shopping and social places as well as run errands, but the city is not designed for pedestrians, and I often feel unsafe or stressed by the cars. Now, as I read these, I'm not endorsing these. I'm just giving you feedback of some of the things that we're hearing. Let's see. How are we doing on time, Myron?
You're good.
Okay. Let's see.
We'll give you another minute.
Okay. We have a good public transportation system. I would use it because then I would not have to fight traffic or worry. That's another one. Oh, this is interesting. It seems like this survey thinks that only people without private cars would use public transportation. But if it was a good system, I think everyone would use it. And I would say just in the 4 or 5 years I've been here, there's been some expansion, which is improving and making things even better. I'll just show this one. A person with a disability. My 25-year-old son is in a wheelchair full time. He needs transportation help every day. I finally quit my job so I could be more free to get him where he needs to be in St. George. It is limited in the transportation. It's impossible. We've tried Uber, and then in parentheses, expensive, and taxis, and sometimes won't put the wheelchair in the back. We used to use Sun Channel when we lived within a 4-mile radius that it covered, and I'm not sure what that's referring to. But then when we built a new house that we needed four more with chair and accessibility, we moved 5 miles from the city center, and there do not qualify for Sun Channel. Let's see. About 10% of the people who live in St. George or Washington City need help getting somewhere. Let's see, once I wrote along, I won't read that. We, the local people, need more transportation options for those with disabilities. So that's just kind of a quick snapshot of some of the feedback that we've received from them. So any questions for me?
Is that based on your plan that you put out to the public for comments on that?
Yes. That was? Yes. Yep. Yeah, that's right. Anybody can have a question?
All right. Sounds okay. Like thanks.
Okay. Thanks, thank you. I'm available if you ever have questions about anything with transportation mobility. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Item B, functional class road program update.
So online, we have Ben Mon from UDOT. We've had him present at this board a couple of times, and he has walked us through the urban area creation and smoothing boundaries and everything. But now we're down to where we need to actually start working on the functional class thing. I'll let Ben introduce his program. Go ahead, Ben.
All right. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep, we can hear you. And I think he went to a really good school, by the way, from what I understand.
I did Utah State University up north, so if that counts, I hope that is in good standing. I'm here today to kind of present a portion of the functional class update process. We've developed a web map to help enable local government officials to interact with the functional class layer that we maintain at UDOT. And I think all of the folks that need to hear this message are well aware of what functional class means. So without further ado, I'm gonna try to just present the web map tool, give you a quick overview of how to interact with that. And then if there's any other questions, we can follow up there. So this web map that we've developed for the functional class update process, it's got some information in here related to FHWA guidance There's a tab that has some questions that, like, frequently asked questions over on the left side. It'll also, there's some links in here that will point you to the HWA guidance document if you happen to need to refer to that. So that's this document here, but that's not the focus of this today. Looks like I lost my screen share. Let me get back to the web map. All right, so there's a little bit of FHWA guidance. There's a quick tutorial over on the left-hand side of how to use the editor tool. Basically, what you're going to end up doing is just drawing some line work in here. And then there's a kind of a pull-down menu for the map layers that are available in here. And so first off, there's the proposed updates. This is an editable layer that anybody with access to this web map can make edits to. I will warn you that once you put something on there, you can't easily take it away. We'll have to work with the GIS folks to clear anything that gets added in there erroneously, but there's a couple of milestones along the way that allow you to kind of back out if you change your mind with a proposed update. But for now, I'm going to turn that layer off and just showcase some of the other layers that are in here. We've referenced the current functional classifications. These are coming from UDOT's authoritative layer. So if you turn that off, you won't see any of the functional classes. You'll just see the underlying or underlying base map. For this web map, in the upper right corner, you've got a choice of a handful of different base layers. If you wanted to look at imagery, there's aerial imagery available. For this purpose, I kind of like the community map because it's pretty simple. But that's one option that this web map allows is changing out that base layer. And as you get into, so let me turn back on the functional class layers. So as you get into some of these city jurisdictions, you'll see we've got the existing functional classifications identified here. If you click on any of those lines, it'll pull up this little pop-up, lists the current classification as minor collector in this case, and the FedAid route number. Those FedAid route numbers that's kind of like a tracking number for UDOT's purposes. Anything that we keep track of for functional classification gets assigned a FedAid route number. I will say it doesn't mean that it necessarily means that it's FedAid eligible. You will see in here that there are minor collectors that are in the rural area, and those are technically not FedAid eligible. So, again, going back, you'll see interstate is going to be this blue line style, and I'll turn on the proposed updates layer, and that kind of brings up this dialog box. If that layer is turned off, you don't see the editor tool. But this little widget here allows you to draw in on this map any proposed changes. And so if I wanted to, for example, draw in a new, and this is totally for demonstration purposes only, but if I wanted to draw in a new stretch of interstate, for example, it pulls up this dialog box, and you can snap on really any of those underlying features, and away you click. And when you get to where you want to complete that segment, just double click. It brings up this simple dialog box. Again, you can reselect the functional class that you're trying to assign. A simple reason, this could just be whoever's recommending, just put a simple reason in there. Probably the most important thing is your name and email address, because this will allow the review team to circle back and address any questions that we might have related to a request, or to kind of give you to close the loop on whether or not that request was accepted or denied. And so I won't create that, but that's just an example of how that tool works, drawing in some line work there. And the last thing I'll showcase is this is some of the stuff that Ivan City sent in. I think Chuck Gillette sent in just an exhibit. So I took a shot at just drawing this in there. And so if I turn that proposed layer off, you can see those are lines that are not in the current functional class map. But I was able to draw those in, those proposed lines. And so there was a minor arterial in this segment, and there were some minor collectors over here, another portion of minor arterial. And this one, I think this one came from Santa Clara. It's a proposed Red Mountain Drive, something along those lines. So that's kind of the interactability of this web map. What we're trying to do with this is review all of these routes and anything that's on the public network. If it needs to be classified other than local, we want to see it on this map. And so this is an opportunity to interact with this. Our goal is to do an initial sweep of Utah with the draft version by the end of April. So I know that's an ambitious time frame, but if our partners at the local level could utilize this map, and along with Dixie, MPO, Myron, your leadership on this will be key, making sure we get everybody involved in it. But that's kind of the quick overview of it. Are there any questions?
If Ivans is not happy with St. George, can they go add some roadways into St. George unbeknownst to us?
I think that's a possibility. But yeah, there will be consequences, I'm sure.
Just checking.
Okay.
Ben, I do see some future roads on there. How much do you want to see future roads on this map?
The recommendation, I think there is value in including some I think important corridors. The guidance from FHWA is especially stuff that involves the National Highway System. They don't want to see any of that stuff included for this purpose that's not funded on the STIP. So within the current STIP cycle, that's 4 years. Now you'll see in this existing map that we do have some proposed line work. I don't know if this is going to be built or not within the next 4 years, but I wouldn't say don't get too ambitious with adding future routes to this map, but I don't think there's FHWA has given us an indication that unless it's on the National Highway System, we have some flexibility in leaving these proposed routes on there. I think there's value in that for planning purposes, just so there's a little bit of consensus on what that facility type might be in the future, even if that date is not set in stone and we don't know exactly when. So there's a little bit of flexibility on that, but I'll say it doesn't make a huge difference whether we add those now or whether we add those at a future date. UDOT has an open door policy when it comes to adding proposed routes in. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Ben.
Can we get a link to this?
I emailed out a link to this before about 2 hours ago.
Oh, okay. So, yeah.
I've got a question for Ben.
Ben, if any of the members here have an issue with the map that might, or have any questions about the map that might go beyond our heads at the MPO, or people able to schedule a meeting with you to kind of walk them through that?
Yes, that would be great. Yeah, if anybody has a question, I would recommend you work through the MPO and Myron and Nick. You guys have been great to work with. So, yeah, any follow-up conversations we can have, certainly.
And then Ben just clarified, the deadline is this, we'd like to get all of the recommended changes by the end of April, so in a month. So if every municipality could look at their areas and say, these are the correct functional classes and provide their edits, because it's something that Myron and Nick and I can't look at everybody's cities and say, this is what we think should be the functional class. So if every Desmond city, it'll be fairly simple to provide those changes that are needed. And as I look through there, I think there's quite a bit of growth in a lot of your guys' areas that functional classes may need to be changed. So it'd be real quick to look at and say, has their traffic increased enough to say, do we need to change these functional classes inside the boundaries? So just take a quick look and make those edits as needed. And I correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, but we would like to get them by the end of April.
Yes, that's correct. And I'll say the majority of the network won't change functional classification. Interstate 15, for example, that's still going to be Interstate 15 at the end of this. So that's one that we really don't have a lot of determination to go through with. But the real work is going to happen at the other end of the spectrum, where we've got minor collectors that maybe need to be elevated to major collectors that maybe are more like a minor arterial now, minor arterials that need to go to other principal arterial, those types of changes as we look at it. One thing I'll close with, these, when you get down into these map layers, we've got the proposed updates, the current functional class. There are some tabs here for these, what we call boundary layers, and I'll just highlight those. There are the municipal boundaries, and so if you want to refer the or reference those in as you're reviewing this, then you can get a sense of exactly where those jurisdictional lines are relative to the roadway network. And also, I think the MPO boundary is in here, but you have to be at the right zoom level to really see it. Same with the county. I don't think those are too important, but right below that, there are some transportation layers, and there's two that we've preloaded in here. And this is the ADT values that are coming out of our count database. And so as you look at this, basically anything that is on the FedAid eligibility list now, we do periodic traffic counting and reporting of those numbers. And so if you turn that layer on, you'll be able to see what the 2023 ADT volumes were. And then there's also this, it's more of a forecasting volume. And it also shows some future routes that I've been identified in planning level out to 2050. So those two layers can be useful, especially when you're for the ADT, the current year ADT. Those values kind of help to inform whether or not that's functioning at the expected level. And again, just to go back up into this FHWA guidance document, if you click on there, this document that it refers you to, let me wait for it to load here, but there are some tables down within that document that describe the ADT characteristics of those different facility types. And so major collectors, typically in a rural context or rural area, those would be carrying between 300 and 2600 vehicles a day. These are national averages, and so when you get to a minor collector, the volumes are less, and so kind of gives you a relative measure of where that facility might fall based on the ADT numbers that we've got information on. So I think I'll say about that one. And there's no further questions. I'll just stay tuned for any follow-ups that might come offline.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
Okay. Thank you.
Item C, SB 195 discussion.
All right. Nick and I are going to tag team this a little bit. So there's SB 195, it's the transportation omnibus bill, so it's very long.
There's a lot of transportation law that was created within that. But today, we're actually only going to talk about one aspect that affects both you and the MPO. So it says that municipalities within the MPO shall update their transportation and traffic circular element of their general plan before July 1st, 2027. Sorry, I know I got some of you scared there. That's a long time, but the legislature wants to make sure we're not just like waiting around until January 2027. So the MPO is actually going to have to work with you from now until then throughout that process. And we actually have to provide an update annually. So before November of 2025, 2026, and 2027, to see where we're at in that process. And the things that are included in this is you have to identify priority connections that remedy physical impediments, such as water conveyances and anything else. They just threw in that term, such as water conveyances, just for fun. And it needs to have a goal to enhance vehicle, transit, bicycle, or pedestrian access to economic, recreational, or other priority destinations. So we got to find where our streets are ending and how we can fix where those ends to help people get to priority destinations. Also, cities must develop cost estimates and potential funding sources as part of this. So they listed state, local, federal, and private sources that you might be looking at. MPOs are required to consult with you and do the reporting, like I just said. We're also supposed to be working with you. Nick and I were talking a little bit about this bill here. WFRC has created a tool that is helpful for this prior to the bill coming out. And so Nick will talk a little bit about that analysis and how maybe we could do something similar and hopefully get some input from you on what we could do to make this process easier for you.
Yeah. So as Nate just said, WFRC has already put something out similar to what this Senate bill is asking everyone to accomplish. Essentially, what you're looking at on the screen is an intersection density score measuring the amount of routes that are accessible with on their roadway network. Most people here should remember that the MPO already did something very, very similar to this with our active transportation accessibility study. We have already done a similar analysis identifying intersection density within our urbanized area, where we took the entire roadway network and analyzed where those three-way, four-way intersections are most condensed to find those areas of high connectivity. So they're asking to take it just a step further and analyze, like they said, some of those physical barrier connectivity problems within the area. So that's part of it. Some of more of the identifying factors are those, like they'll said, those connectivity breaks. If we check out this section of the map, we can see, you know, what the connectivity break is, essentially where those roadways end, so cul-de-sacs, just straight up dead ends that aren't connected just yet. Think of Gap Canyon Parkway that is currently built out in segments, but not as a whole. So that's what we're trying to accomplish and identify here. You see that that's currently analyzed on this hexagon grid section. It's also analyzed on traffic analysis zones that we use for our travel demand model, as well as a per mile intersection score here, also on hexagon grid. So this has already been accomplished in our area. We're just going to update it a little more, create some of those high level like identification, physical barrier identifications, and then work with you all to make sure that it's as accurate as possible.
so that we can pursue some of those future endeavors. So, did I miss anything?
No, I think that's pretty much it. I think I would like to hear what would be useful for them, but also if we could do it in close coordination until we can get up to the interim session.
Sorry, you probably can't hear me sitting back there.
So we're supposed to be to the interim session before November 1st. November is the last interim session of every month, or every year, excuse me. And so we'll want to be at least coming up with a plan to move forward so we have something to report. And Myron and I were meeting with the other MPOs in 2 weeks to because the interim schedule has not yet been released, so we have to figure out what's going to be on that schedule and coordinate with the other MPOs so we can all do our report on the same day. So let's keep in close contact throughout this process.
So just for clarification, each city has to do their own update, but is the MPO going to provide us the data? Is that what we're aiming for? Or
essentially.
Just use you as a tool?
Yeah. So since the MPO has already done the analysis previously and we can easily recreate that analysis process, we'll provide that aspect of it and then we'll work with you all to get your guys' proposal efforts into it.
And incorporate it into the required
Is that the only thing that's different from what we've been doing in the past?
Yeah, essentially. I'm not sure if there's any other like differences that we haven't done in the past that we have to do now. Or
as far as your general plan, sorry.
Does anybody have a sense of why the state's like, you must do it in 2 years? Or anybody have a sense of why they put this all?
Somebody had a hobby horse. They were
so I haven't heard the background. I haven't heard the background of this bill, but when it was first proposed, it was proposed as cities must find a way to connect where there's water conveyances. That's how the bill was proposed. And then it kind of rolled out.
Like somebody's got a problem in their backyard and they want it fixed. So, yeah.
Right. And there's not a ton of those, but yeah. So I'm sorry I don't have the full answer, but I can tell you where it started.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So the language was changed to traverse impediments such as waterways. The impediments that we have in this area are geographic bluffs and hills and a couple of rivers, I-15, all these things that we've been talking about for years. We're well aware of those impediments, and we have a plan to get through them. But this just requires that we do that one last analysis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It should, like Nick was saying, we've done it before with our SS4A grant, so it shouldn't be that big of a stretch to get it done.
It's the ATA study.
Excuse me.
The ATA study on this.
The ATA study.
All these acronyms.
That sounds like Star Wars.
Somewhere around here we have an LOA.
Yeah. And some,
a list of acronyms.
Some of these roadways where they end, they're already in our long range plan. Like when Nick and I were talking about that, we noticed there's some roads that just end, but you have a plan to connect those.
When is the horror?
So some of those are going to be pretty easy.
I was going to bring that up. I don't know when it's going to be complete. Everyone here has been a part of the meeting.
That's the grid network.
Yeah.
That's essentially what I'm asking for is how to connect the grid better.
Yeah.
Finding those dead end roads.
They'll be presenting that in May.
Okay. So we should have that results too to say we've already got some other information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll use that. Is that a final in May or just an update? You know where?
I know there appears we're on.
Yeah. So we'll use that as a springboard to help back us up a little bit. I'm sure the rest of the other MPOs and anyone else in the state will be doing the same thing. But I want to say, Myron's right, that May will be the next update at least. I don't know if it'll be actually fully done in May or not.
So what is the, I mean, you brought up, I get the waterways or something like that, or development stops and another road on this other side, and they didn't connect. But when you brought up cul-de-sacs, I'm like, those are by design. What are we doing with that? Because there's houses in the way of those, and that's
a big expense. It goes into the reason why we did the active transportation study and developed that tool, is because some of those areas can be used to maybe put trails. My first name that comes to mind is Bloomington Hills Park, where you have all these cul-de-sacs that are surrounded by a park, and you get there through the trail system over there. So that's probably one of the reasons that it's identified. But for whatever other reason, maybe for long-range planning efforts, if someone decided to sell their house to UDOT for connecting it, I'm not sure why. Cul-de-sacs specifically are also called out. It's just another way to identify breaks in the network, just so that people can understand why. So probably nothing will come about it, with that, but it's just another reason to say, here's a break in the network. Here, how can we address it later on?
I think it's a good idea to identify, but as we get going through this process, I think the first step might be is, as we talk to the legislature, saying, this is our process and plan for moving forward. As we get closer to that July 1st, 2027 date, we'll be getting into the nitty gritty, and hopefully we'll be able to give them a reason why or why not we're prioritizing. Like, yeah, we're not connecting these two roads because there's a topographical barrier, in the way, like a giant mesa and a tunnel is not feasible, mm-hmm. right? And I think if we can say things like that, like, hey, we're not going to be tearing down existing houses to connect a roadway, but like Nick said, maybe this is a good opportunity for an AT connection.
Does it matter the classification of the road? Because like some of your residential streets just end, and then another development's coming in, and
it doesn't specify, but I think that's where your expertise and your knowledge of your cities will come into play.
Yeah. Staying with AADT, I don't think that'll be analyzed here either. It's just physical roadways and their natural or permanent breaks.
Will you be getting with each of the cities, or will we need to reach out to you when it's time to start?
We've already started collecting and creating the data set. So we'll be reaching out once we have more of that put together and some of the analysis portion done. And then when we have a better understanding of what comes next from this process, we'll be reaching out with those updates as well.
All right.
You want to hear from us in a certain time period, like, hey, where are you guys at? Just waiting for every.
I don't know here, but I'm sure someone will work. Passing on to somebody else.
Will we be trying to get some sort of a standard form that we can just play and plug into our own general plan so that we don't have to start off from scratch? Is that kind of what we're a sample?
Like form? A sample. A
sample appendix to our.
So just amending your plan.
Yeah,
and just recently passed.
We just got ours done last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's different ways to do that. I've seen in other long-range planning stuff that I've done, it's been as simple as like, hey, please refer to this other document where that addresses this criteria. And so there's different ways, but we can look into a model for that language. Yeah,
that'd be nice if you determine what they're actually looking for. Put that into a model, that would be great.
Yeah.
I'm kind of guessing on what they're looking for right now, especially on a county. Is this a municipal level or a county?
Municipal, yeah.
So I don't have to do it. It's just the cities and towns.
Let me look at the exact language.
You might have looked at the
I believe
you. Just because you asked that, Todd, we're going to find a way to make you do it.
We were looking at it from an urbanized standpoint, so I don't believe the more rural areas will be incorporated, but yeah.
Says on or before July 1st, 2027, a municipality within an NPO boundary shall, in consultation with relevant stakeholders, update the transportation and traffic circulation element of the municipality's general plan. as described in subsection, the number.
It's just MPOs, municipalities.
Yeah.
Municipalities within the MPO.
Good.
That it?
That's all I have.
Okay. Call for planning grant project nominations.
So every year we open up a funding source for planning grants. This year, in beginning July 1st of 2025, we will have $150,000 available for planning grant projects. I would like to hear what kind of proposals you might have for that. Last year, we only got one proposal from the county to do a study on the Leeds North interchange. That study should be wrapping up within the next 3 or 4 months. And we'll have expended that money that way. In years past, we've helped a lot of you do your master transportation plans, updates and whatnot, coupled back to the transportation plans. If anybody has any needs, would you please drop an email to me? I would like to take some time in our May meeting next month and go over those proposals and make some recommendations to the VTEC on which ones of those to fund. Any questions?
So I guess the email I sent you.
That would fit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like everybody needs to update their master plan by 2027, so maybe some of that money can go towards.
That was jointly in premonition.
Yeah, jointly. Not recreating it all individually, but together.
Right. Yeah, Cameron, we can help you with the transit plan if you want to do something that, along those lines. Again, this money, the planning grant money, if we fund more than 50%, we want to control the project in our contract. Guys, if we fund less than 50%, we can turn it over to the city.
And I think we're going to do all three of them anyway, so.
Okay.
Transit, AT, and road.
May 7th.
Okay. UPWP review. I mean.
I emailed out this morning our Unified Planning Work Program. This document is our annual, basically our annual contract. Arthur actually read every word of it last year.
How did I do that when I was sleeping?
Yeah.
I think I put it under my pillow.
It is substantially similar to one that we did last year. There is one fairly significant difference. This new UPWP includes the language, by entering into this agreement, the Dixie MPO certifies that it does not operate any programs promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives that violate any applicable federal anti-discrimination laws and in full compliance with Executive Order 14173, ending illegal discrimination and restoring merit-based opportunity. That language is required for our federal funding. Again, I've emailed this out to everyone. Would you please review it? I would like to go to the VTEC in 2 weeks and recommend this for adoption by the VTEC. If any of you can identify any issues, that would be good to get those resolved before we go to VTEC in 2 weeks.
It came out today, you said?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not seeing that person. Got the one on the functional class.
It was before that one.
Yeah.
I'll double check. There's three hard copies here that you're welcome to take.
Just got one.
Okay. I'll double check and make sure that email.
I saw your functional classification email. I didn't see this other one.
Yeah, I also didn't see it.
Okay, apparently, I tried to email it out earlier today.
So went to the wrong group.
Too big.
Check my juvenile.
Okay, yeah, okay. I stand corrected. I will be sending this out 10 minutes after our meeting.
Okay, local project status update before we turn Arthur loose. Sir Nick wants to say something.
Yes. Just a brief update. Safe Streets and Roads for All Discretionary Grant has just released a new notice of funding opportunity for fiscal year 2025. If you would like, we can send out a copy of this later on, but if you like, you can go up to the SS4A website for any additional updates. I'll give just a couple brief ones right now. So there's two main available funding sources for this new year. There's a total of just under $1 billion for 2025 monies. There's implementation grant funds up to $580 million available, and planning and demonstration grant money for a total of $402 million for those activities. It's an expected, for planning and demonstration, it's an expected number of 400 to 700 projects are anticipated to be awarded, and expected funding range is anywhere between $100,000 to $5 million, $5 million. Unlike last funding cycle, where there were three possible deadlines to submit an application, there's only going to be one application deadline for both planning and implementation funds, and it'll be in June 2025. Any recent changes made? The maximum expected award for planning and demonstration monies has changed from $10 million to $5 million, so that's the total amount that is available to be awarded. Contains an updated action plan requirements for implementation grant recipients and references to rescinded executive orders and priorities from previous administration have been removed. What those are, I can't specifically say. Just from here, there's parts of the NOFO that probably get into a little bit deeper. And then there are just a few other changes that you can see if you want to take a look at that at a later date. We did talk to all of you who were involved with the SS4A action plan that we did. Some of you expressed interest in applying for some additional funds. I believe demonstration grants were the best idea that we came up with because implementation has some more strings attached, as well as some more competition this go around. So if you would still like to do that, feel free to reach out to us. We'll help you in any way that we can with that application process. And we'd be happy to partner with anyone who's looking at trying to access some funds. It is still an 80-20 match. I just want to put that out there. So just like last time, so maybe 20 match. Any questions? Cool.
Okay. Perkins.
We have a reconstruction project downtown going on 100 North. Just a complete rebuild with new pavement and pedestrian facilities, landscaping. Nice pedestrian-friendly improvements we're putting in, so it'll be a pretty nice project right in the heart of downtown. And we have pavement management coming up this month, both some chip seal and some slurry seal. Hopefully be done by May, all of that. And that's about all we have.
Okay, Ivans?
So our old highway number 191 Phase 2 project widening has just started. Some utility work is going to be going on. We are going to have
a signal set up for create, just so we can close the lane, and so we'll have people stopping at the signals and waiting for the lights to go green. Speed limit got reduced to 30 miles per hour through the zone. Saw an interesting post from the sheriff's department, the county line, like, we don't know why it's going down, but nobody told us, but here's, you can be aware of it.
They injected some.
They injected some snarkiness in there.
He did ask us.
Tell them.
Public works is fine. Except I heard you took our signs down.
That might have been.
One of the tractor just doing whatever they're doing. One of them just put covers over them, but as long as they don't get lost.
Anyway, that's gonna be a 4-month project, so we'll be in construction for that period.
4 months.
Yeah.
They have a lot of equipment out there, they hit it hard.
So like I said, there's utility work that's gonna be going on too, pretty quick. Then we're also doing HA 5 project coming up, and then we got some striping to do and getting all that done before the end of the fiscal year, so that's it.
Okay, as far as the working goes, we've also working with pavement preservation project coming up. Coming up with Hurricane, their contractor. Leeds, you here? Take that as a no. Thank you, George.
Got tech rings going on?
That's not good.
Looks good.
That roadway.
A little bit of a low.
We've got 6 or 7 traffic signals under design right now. 6 of them for sure will go in next fiscal year, because once we get the equipment, maybe 7 of them. Crazy.
You done with Riverside Drive doing the pavement replacement on there, or just about one of that?
Oh, no, we've got one side to do it at Riverside.
We're gonna do the intersection of Riverside.
What's that? Convention Center.
Convention Center.
Yeah. We've got 700 south coming up next week that we're gonna be grinding, raising manholes, lowering manholes, grinding, chip sealing.
We're downplaying that a little bit.
Don't speak to that.
700 south, all the way?
Our plan is to chip seal it, there's a lot of traffic on there. So we were just discussing about how do we do some grinding, some profiling on that road with the amount of traffic we've got. So you're out of timing.
But, yeah, we're going into what? This will be our spring chip seal.
Just pretend like there's an event on that road.
Yeah.
Close it.
Every day.
School up.
Called high school and college.
Well, you know, after May 22nd.
I live by Snow Canyon High School, and it reminds me of a Mad Max movie sometimes. Certain times of day.
We've got several designs going on right now, so nothing much more for construction.
Have you?
Yep.
Santa Clara?
I don't have any updates this morning.
Pokerville?
Just dealing with a few of the issues on the parkway. Still hoping as soon as possible. Most of the utilities are out of the way, and continuing on. The Tokerville Reservoir did receive its chlorine, so the contractor and the water district have pretty much green light to go there, which will be the impacting State Route 17 there at the Anderson Junction area by I-15 exit. They'll be using haul trucks to come across the road there. And so be here. You know, anybody let them know that there'll be some heavy construction going through there for about 2 years.
Yeah, that's it. Okay.
Okay. Have it?
That's it.
Transit?
Nothing too much to report. So Mike Carter's been our transit manager for a while, and he's been threatening to retire for a while now, and I think it's coming up. We put it out for a transit manager.
comes that we, yeah, we'll see how that goes. After, when we hire somebody, I've been told I'm too busy, so it may be that transit will go under our assistant city manager that we just got. So you may not get much of an update.
Do you agree with them that you're too busy?
It's too busy.
So that brings up an interesting question, Cameron. As part of our federal charge, we're required to have a transit representative on our advisory and our executive council. The executive council will not be a problem because we still have a three elected officials from St. George that could represent transit. But I would be looking to you to recommend what we do about having transit represented.
They may still tell me to be that representative, but it just transit won't be reporting to me or anything like that. So I'll just have to coordinate. But we'll see. I told them about it.
Okay. Thank you.
I didn't forget about the MPO. I promise you.
Good.
You're just a bunch of tools. Get that on record. They record it.
You not?
A couple of quick follow-up items from a couple meetings ago. There was a discussion when we talked about those feasibility studies, those trail feasibility plans, and if we commit those funds, does that federalize with all the projects moving forward? We reached out to our federal partners. As long as we're not completing the environmental document within that feasibility phase, it does not require all future project funding to be federalized. So you could utilize state funds. You can perform some environmental, I'll call it research or tasks. We just can't be completing the environmental document in that phase. Is that any questions?
It's not completing the environmental, or it's not starting the environmental.
We cannot be completing an environmental document. So if there's some work that's done with those projects, from their indication, that can happen. We just cannot be completing an environmental document that we utilize for future phases. Okay. Otherwise, you'll be required to federally obligate everyone, or federally fund. And then maybe just a quick update on our grants before I get into our projects. We still don't have final answers on which of our current grants are going to proceed or not. We're still anxiously waiting. We're in conversations on a lot of them. It's looking favorable, but we will likely need to redo all of our federal grants on those to remove, for example, the DEA language and, or DEI language and potentially other items. So the two big ones, obviously Milepost 6-8 is a substantial one, $90+ million there. Another $70+ million on South Cedar. I know it's not in the MPO, but those are a couple of our substantial ones that we're trying to keep them moving forward. So as far as
you remove that, is that Sweetie DV stuff?
We know that right now. That's what we're being told. That will likely require a new agreement for removal of those, but we don't know for the other elements as well. A few quick project updates. SR 18, the reconstruct we have going on there, we had plan in hand, so we're headed for the PS&E phase, likely to be in the August timeframe. The design's moving forward great.
Which one's that one?
The South Block.
Oh, South Block.
We have separated out the Boulevard project from that project. It's now a standalone project, the preservation on SR 34. Right now, we're looking to have our PS&E at the end of this month. Our hope is to construct that this fall, so that it's all complete before SR 18 goes under construction. So we'll be finalizing that design here in the next couple of months for advertisement. I-15, 6-8, we're in the trenches, plan in hand right now, scheduled this month. And just a lot going on as far as coordination with everything happening there. We are proceeding as though the grant were in place. We have not stopped any of the efforts there. And so we're still hopeful. Individual with you for just a quick second afterwards on that project. I-15 at Arizona State Line to Cottonwood Creek should be starting construction here next week or so. SR-318 from Quail Creek there, it's under construction now. Got an HSIP project there, gun lock with the county, just getting contracting underway, it sounds like, getting close to getting started there. I-15 southbound passing lanes from mile 16 to 20. We're in negotiations for a contract on that one. So we should be getting into the design in the next few months, completing up this year. SR-9, Leverkin to Zion National Park, we just awarded that contract. So construction going here for long.
What's the scope of that project on 9?
Mainly microsurface seal, but also a bunch of pedestrian ramp reconstructs. Signing the bulk of it's a microsurface. Getting ready to kick off the SR-9 Virgin River Bridge fencing project. We've done a lot of coordination with the several locals on that and installing that the fence or the railing on the inner portion of that structure. So we'll be anxious to see that moving along. Passing lane on SR-7 up through that large cut. We've got our 60% review here at the end of May. That will advertise by the end of this year, construction next season. We have kind of a second phase on the Vail structure. So you guys recall we had some failures out there. We had an initial phase to, I'll call it a short-term repair to get the bridge functional, to get it back open to no restrictions. We're now in a phase of evaluating the structure for a long-term fix, whether that's a retrofit or I'll call worst-case scenario a replacement. Anything's available right now, but we're in a design phase to see what that long-term replacement or excuse me, long-term repair would potentially be on that structure. So,
it could potentially widen it, replace it, or retrofit it.
If it gets replaced, yes. The way the structures group works within the department is they replace what's existing, and then the region would have to try to fund any potential increases beyond what's there now. If I were a betting man, I don't believe it will be a replacement, but we'll see what this evaluation says. Just a heads up that there is kind of a phase two for that long-term fix. Snow Canyon parking trailhead area is under construction. And then that's kind of about it. So any questions on it? You don't brought this.
Okay.
You're asking about talking about state routes. This is not a question for you, but does anybody know where State Route 8 is?
State Route what?
8.
8 is Sunset Boulevard.
I said it wasn't for you.
Well, you just threw it out as a question. So it's the city highway.
1.3 miles.
Very short.
We always talk about 18. We never talk about
it. Are you interested in taking it over?
No.
That's why we don't talk about it.
Sorry, I didn't hear you say that.
Hey, Virgin, are you here? Washington?
We did finish the 300 East right turn lane as well as medians, both on 300 East and Telegraph, east side of Telegraph. So it's been going well. It's kind of interesting to see the when you used to turn left off of Telegraph onto 300 East, everybody that turned left is kind of like, I'll just go in this lane, I'll just go in that lane. And putting the median there, everybody hugs that median, goes right where they're supposed to. So it's kind of cool. that.
Nice addition, yeah.
Yeah, so. And we just, you know, we got the concrete on the median was down for about an hour before the first person that wanted donuts drove over the top of it, wheels through it, to get to the do not enter sign on the other side and go in that entrance, because the donuts are important, so luckily we still saw it, and we were able to fix it. Yeah, it's about that high.
It wasn't that high after they were through it.
No.
And then on Main Street, there at just in between First 100 North and Telegraph, there was a mid-block crosswalk between the Nice and Old Nice and Store and the church, and we have now obtained, the city has obtained both those buildings and that property, so we're getting rid of that and extending our left turn lane onto Telegraph up further, so we can go as far as we can, because it's already full of vehicles, so getting used by that.
Okay, County.
Got anything new?
Nick, did you want to end the thing? No jokes or nothing? Guess we'll adjourn then.
I don't have any,
Okay. Thanks. Thanks, pal. I've got the next meeting. Next meeting, May 1st.